Welcome to QSO. It's all about ham radio. And this week our guests include Joel Kleinman, the managing editor of QST Magazine for the American Radio Relay League, and Dr. Michael Barrett of the TW Antenna Company. All of this is coming up right after this. We've got something special for you. TW Antennas, your DX adventure, has got a special going on right now. You can now save on shipping when you buy the complete TW 2010 Traveler Antenna Combo. Now, the complete package includes the TW 2010 antenna, the quadruped, and the deluxe transport bag. You have to see this. Go to the website and check this out. It's a complete package plus $50 savings on shipping. The complete package is $549.85. That's $549.85. But check it out on the website. Go and look at twantennas.com. And if you can't find that, go to our website, and that's tedrandall.com, TEDRANDALL.com, for the QSO radio program, and check out the TW Antenna Special right now on QSO. Here is a conversation with Bob Heil, and it's all about audio. Let's talk microphones for a second. When you're in a situation like an emergency or disaster field day, and you really want to punch through and you want something that's going to just cut through the mustard, so to speak, what's a good microphone to do that?
Well, we're talking about amateur radio, and, of course, the FCC dictates the fact that we'll be about 3 KCs wide, so you don't have a lot of bandwidth. Well, what we do is the microphone for that choice is a microphone that we tailor with it actually has a labyrinth inside it, Ted. It's an amazing little piece that I designed back in 1982, and this thing tunes 10 dB spike at about 2,500 cycles. I mean, it's just in your face. Not pretty sounding, but it cuts right through, rolls everything off under 600 cycles, everything off of it about 5K, with this great big spike right in the middle of the human voice, where we need to know, what did you say, an F or an S, a P or a B, to get that articulation. Because when we're out in the emergencies, or with her just running a contest with a lot of noise and there's a lot of stations, that guy's going to be heard first because all of his power is going to be right where the human ear wants to hear those important syllables. And that's what we've done for this industry, is create microphones that do that. We also have, of course, as you well know, microphones that work on the performance level. But for ham radio, it's a whole different ballgame because we're only dealing with 2.5 to 3 KC wide bandwidth that the FCC will dictate to us. But the important thing is to get articulation through, and then we build that in microphones that you can hold in your hand, or we build it in headsets that you can wear and have hands-free, that kind of thing.
Well, now, of all the Heil models, which one is the most optimum for that sort of thing? Which one would you, if you were going to pick one today to operate field day, what would you pick?
Well, we build a number of things. That element is called an HC4, a Heil cartridge 4. That's got that big spike in it. And that HC4 we build in a headset, our ProSet 4. We build it in a microphone, which is the HM10 that has both elements in it, both that HC4 and the HC5, which is a real smooth reg-to type thing. And we have it in our Goldmine, the GM4. And all of those products have the HC4 for ultimate communications. And then they have another element that you can switch in for when you're just talking to your buddies and you don't need all that that spike and that articulate sound to cut through noise and things. But we make the HC4 into a lot of different products because we make various headsets and microphones, and the HC4 is the one to do that with.
Of all the Heil mics, which ones do you find the HC4 cartridge in?
Well, we have the HM10, our Goldmine GM4. Those are both microphones. In fact, the GM4 looks like our PR20 that you see on the stages, but it has a push-to-talk switch in it, and it has both of these elements. It has the wideband element and the HC4. Then we also have the Handy Mic, And the Handy Mic 4, it's only 4 inches long that has this element in it, and that's what we use for a hand mic. It's just wonderful for communications for ham radio.
Before you make your next selection for a microphone for your new ham rig or your old ham rig, remember Heil Sound. That's heilsound.com. Or you can find them on our website at Ted Randall, TedRandall.com. And remember, Heil is spelled H-E-I-L. That's H-E-I-L, heilsound.com. Well, our guest is Joel Kleinman, and Joel is the managing editor of QST. And Joel, how are you getting along today?
Oh, just fine, thanks.
So you're getting ready for the September issue.
Yeah, we are wrapping up work on the September issue. We work a couple months ahead. And so we're into, you know, we're almost a season ahead of everybody else. So for us, it's we're thinking fall and fall operating events and that kind of thing where most people are on summer vacation.
Well, that is one thing I will say about a print publication, especially with the internet now so much intact and everyone is so used to instant everything, people forget the fact that a print publication takes a little while. You have to put it all together, and then the thing actually has to physically go to press, and then it has to go through all the paces of mailing and distribution and all that sort of thing. So it's not.
That's true.
So you have to forecast. You can't just, you know, or else when you publish, you're outdated before, as soon as they get it, it's an outdated piece of material.
Yeah.
You know?
That's true. And what we try to do is be as up-to-date as possible. But with the advent of the internet, of course, we can be really up-to-date by, you know, within the hour of any breaking news on our website, adrrl.org. And that's, of course, the main source of news for most of our members.
Well, I'll tell you something, though. There is nothing on my back wall here. If I turn around and face the back wall, there's magazine racks full of old QSTs, stuff that goes back into the 60s, some of the stuff in the 50s. You know, and of course, back then, the magazine was a smaller magazine, you know. But I've got, I mean, they're just everywhere. There's nothing that replaces a print magazine with pictures. I don't know, there's something magical about it. You can have a notebook, you can log online, you can look at a website. But the magazine, I don't know what it is. There's a special magic about print magazines. And the covers of QST are fascinating in themselves. You know, you go through all these, especially you go through them and you just look at all the covers that have been on QST, and it's almost unfathomable all the things that they've done with the magazine, all the directions it's gone in, and all the different types of articles and whatnot.
Absolutely. Well, we've been publishing since 1915. We don't say continuously because we were shut down during World War I and immediately thereafter. So we missed, I don't know, I believe 18 issues back then. But aside from that, we've published continuously since 1915. So gone through all the evolutions and revolutions in amateur radio, and we hope to like to think we're up to date and as much as anybody else with new technology and emerging technologies. As far as print magazine, I totally agree with you. There's some, you know, other people who don't have that same feel for print publication, but I prefer them myself. But as I mentioned before, for certain things like breaking news, certainly the internet is far advantageous for that, getting timely information out to people. We have WNAW bulletins that we send out, and the internet, and they work far better for news. But as far as articles and columns that are not particularly timely, I agree with you totally.
Well, you know, I've got,
this is the way to go.
I've got internet on my pocket PC and email. You know, I think almost everybody does today. You know, almost everybody, not everybody. Some folks just don't want it. And the immediacy is good. I will agree with you. There's nothing that beats the immediacy of it. But I don't know. There's something about a print magazine. You can sit down on the sofa and you can open up the magazine and relax. You can lay in bed and hold the magazine over your head and read. You know, you can take it with you under your arm, and if you've got a doctor's appointment someplace or you've got to wait somewhere, the magazine fits just very comfortably under your arm or in your hand. And you know, all the hassles of a notebook computer, of plugging it in and the battery running down, and can I get wireless here? And I'm not talking that technology down. I'm just saying you still have to go a long, long ways in order to meet the portability of a magazine, because you've got those high-res photos in there. And then, mm-hmm. I like to study projects. I mean, you'll see a project in, like, for example, in QST. You know, you have a picture and a diagram and the text and all that kind of stuff. And I like to study that stuff. You know, I like to look at it, read it again, you know, study the diagram and all that kind of stuff. And the magazine is just so convenient. And I'm not trying to sell magazines. I'm just saying that it's, you know, I have a deep appreciation for the print version of the ARRL, which is QST. But now let me ask you this. I don't want to take you back to a time before your time, but I would like to ask, what changes have you seen in QST over the years? Things that you've noticed that have changed. If you went back to look at a 1955 edition and a 1965 edition, on just following it all through, what changes have you noticed in the magazine?
Well, you know, we've tried to do two things. One, we try to make QST as interesting as possible for today's hams. And as you know, and everybody knows, ham radio has evolved and is evolving. It used to be more of a technical hobby than it is today. There are still many technically oriented hams, and we have a substantial amount of space devoted to technical material in each issue, as we did back in, say, the 50s. But there's so much more diversity in ham radio these days, and we reflect that. There was no APRS, there were no digital modes and satellites back in the 50s, and the things that people were dreaming about and experimenting with, a lot of them have come to pass. And so we have far more far greater range of subject matter to cover in each issue than we did back then. And for that reason, you'll find columns that, there's one column in QST that been going for a couple of years called Eclectic Technology. And there, the person who puts that together just takes, browses around and looks for things that are of interest to hams, but that hams might not have heard about, that are on the cutting edge of technology. And back in the 50s, sideband came to be dominant, and there was some evolutionary currents going on in ham radio, but these days, just like with everything else, there's a much faster pace of change, and we have to reflect that. So that's our challenge, is reflecting the ham radio world as it is, and also looking ahead to the future and pointing hams that direction and toward the new emerging technologies.
Well, our guest today is Joel Kleinman, and he is the managing editor of QST, if you've just tuned in. And if you've ever wondered, had questions about the magazine, you know, this is your time to tune your ears up and listen, because I'm going to ask some questions here, and because I've got some questions myself about the magazine. Well, I don't want to just live in the past, but there was a time when QST was a certain size, because on my bookshelf there's all these QSTs. And then they went to a larger format. The magazine became much bigger. And maybe a few less pages, but far bigger size-wise. I'm curious as to what facilitated that change. Why did they do that? Was there a technical reason why, or did everybody just get together and say, this thing's too small, we want it bigger? How did that work?
Well, that was a little bit before my time, but what I can say is that the economy of just paper cost is a good chunk of the cost of putting each issue out. And we found that by trimming QST to that 6x9 approximately size that we had back then, we were wasting a whole lot of paper. And going to the larger size, it was a more standard size for magazines, gave us the economy. We were able to save money with our printer and make better use of the paper we were buying.
Well, you're right.
Economics was a big part of it.
You're right in the standpoint that the QST now looks like another magazine. Back then, it looked a little different. If you were to put it on a shelf next to a bunch of magazines, it was a different size. While Good Housekeeping and all these other magazines were basically magazine size.
So that's right.
So
yep.
Now, let me ask you a question. You have to divide. The magazine is divided up, and of course you're the editor. You have to figure out how you're going to get all these people, how you make all these people happy. You know, you got people who are into contesting, people into the technical side of ham radio. You got folks that want to hear news. You've got folks that want to read human interest stories. And, I mean, you've even got off-the-wall subjects like, and I don't want to say off-the-wall, but, I mean, there's a whole group of people that are into things like radio astronomy. So you have to crowd that thing in, too. You got to get, So how do you balance all of that? How do you determine how much of this to put in and how much of that to put in so that everybody, you can't ever make everybody happy, but but you're obviously having to put that's the job that's on your shoulders. So I'm curious, how do you weigh these things out? How do you decide what goes in to this magazine?
Well, it's not a simple process, as you can imagine. We have certain columns that run every month that cover many of the specialized areas of ham radio, and some that run less frequently than every month. And as far as articles go, those we try to present a mix of articles, both the technical and the non-technical, that cover as much ground as we possibly can. And even if it's something that, say, we had a survey and only 7% of active hams are involved with, we still might run an article on it if it's something that's a little bit different, unusual, and has some interest that even people who aren't necessarily going to say, oh, I want to do that, maybe some people will, but not everybody, at least they'll be interested in reading about it. And we find that many of our projects, this is another evolution since the 50s, people just aren't building as much as they were. And people tell us that, but people are also telling us very clearly that they like the technical content of QST the way it is, which includes three, four construction projects in each issue. So we're very aware of what our members, our readers are telling us, and make some tweaks here and there, but for the most part, we'll follow the formula that basically gives people a wide variety of choice. If somebody's, most hams are interested in antennas, and people tell us that very consistently. If anything, interest is growing from where it used to be. It's the highest rated area of interest for hams that we've found, and there'll always be something substantial about antennas in each issue. And at the same time, we like to cover some of the perhaps less popular areas of ham radio. And we have a committee, actually two different committees, that accept unsolicited manuscripts for publication or return them to the author. And when we go through those, we keep all this in mind, saying, boy, this is a really interesting subject. If it's of interest to the people around the table, perhaps even if they haven't thought about it much before or tried it, then maybe it'll be of interest to our readers. And we have another set of reviewers who review non-technical material, and the same process goes on there. And if somebody, we had an article several years ago about some hams in Mississippi who loaded up a bridge and tried to use a bridge as an antenna and actually made some contacts. And, you know, that's a little bit off the wall, but it just seemed like something fun that these guys thought of doing with ham radio and, you know, didn't kill any small animals or anything. And we just thought, hey, this is pretty cool. So we included a short article on that. So it's a balancing act, and we don't have enough page space in QST to publish everything we'd like to publish. So unfortunately and sadly, we have to return some good material, worthy material, to authors just because there isn't room for it. Or maybe we've published something on the same subject very recently, and we'd have to hold it for a year or a year and a half before we'd publish it. So there's many, many reasons and many criteria that go into accepting an article, but those are a few of them.
Our guest is Joel Kleinman, and he is the managing editor of QST. Well, you know, something I've noticed, I'll get an issue when there's been a contest, and there will be so much data, so many call letters. I mean, it's like it's endless, you know, the stuff that you folks publish. How do you get all of that data? How do you assemble it? And wind up getting it into a magazine? I mean, I look at that, and it's mind-boggling. First off, it's hard to believe that there's that many hams participating in a contest, but I know they are. And I'm just wondering how you managed all that. I can just imagine you getting some guy's call sign wrong. I bet you get your phone ringing.
Yeah, we definitely try to be as perfect as possible, but what we rely on for that is software, and it's in the old days, back when I first started working here in the 70s and into the 80s, we were pretty heavily manually transcribing information, checking for awards and contests. There was a lot of man hours involved and a lot of manual labor. And these days, everything is done by computers, and computers sometimes goof up. So the system works certainly well enough, and that's really the only way we can manage doing it with all the participation in the contests and the awards. And that's one of the big advances that we've had over the decades is the automation, and it's allowed us to quite frankly put our resources into other places as an organization rather than the staff needed to do this manual labor. So it's been a labor saving advance over the years, and it's worked pretty well.
For those that are just, you know, listening, that are shortwave listeners, and for those that especially those that are just getting into ham radio, and even some that have got their tickets, they've got their technician, you know, they're listening right now, they're also shortwave fans, and they're not familiar, they're not real familiar with the league, and they're not familiar with QST, let's just go right to ground zero, and let's talk about the awards and the contest. Why don't you tell us about the awards? Let's go with the awards first, and then let's go to contests, and let's go down the list. I mean, everybody knows about Field Day, but there's other things going on, and a lot of folks probably don't know anything about them, and you'd be the perfect person to tell us.
Okay, well, I don't have a list of everything in front of me, but I'll hit some of the highlights. We have a whole range of operating events that we sponsor, and of course there are operating events that other groups sponsor as well. Some of them very local and limited, and some of them nationwide, even worldwide. As far as awards go, our biggest and most popular award over the years has been DXCC. It's the DX Century Club, which is awarded for contacting and receiving confirmation of the contact from 100 different foreign entities, or DX entities. Well, the countries list, but since many of our entities aren't really countries, we call it the entities list. And that's very, very popular. And then, of course, there are endorsements for higher totals, over 100, which many thousands of hams have accumulated over the years. And, of course, the expeditions where hams will go to some godforsaken part of the world, usually a rock or some island that's uninhabited, usually, or some place where there's no ham radio activity, either ever or just very occasionally, and set up shop for maybe 5 days or a week and make as many contacts as possible and give out the contacts, and I'm sure the shortwave listeners are aware of those, like to listen for those as well as the hams. And but the hams can, by contacting these stations, qualify for DXCC by grabbing an entity that doesn't get on the air very much. So that's our most popular. And then we have worked all states. And hams just kind of starting out in the HF realm will shoot for this one. It's basically just the way it sounds. Just get a confirmation from a ham in each state. And once those are in hand, just send them in and we'll send you a nice certificate for that. And we have participation awards to encourage people to take part in contests. So if you have a clean sweep and sweepstakes, if you contact every section and get a confirmation, then you have what's called a clean sweep and you're eligible for a certain prize for that.
Now, let's explain, though, just for a second, what the sections are. You know, you got a new ham and says, gee, what does that mean? A clean sweep if I've worked every section. And a lot, some of these fellows, I don't think, are aware of the fact that the way the ARRL is set up, we're dealing with sections. And explain a little bit of that to them so they understand. And how many sections there are and how it's divided up.
Oh, sure. Country is divided into 73 sections, and it's just a way, 71 sections. It's just a way of breaking up the country into manageable areas. And we use sections in different ways in the sweepstakes contest, where you can contact each of the sections, and also our administrative organization is divided into 15 divisions and 71 sections. So each division has a division director and a vice director, and each section has a section manager that kind of is in charge of ARRL administrative duties in his or her geographic area. So there's an Idaho section, and for larger states, there are several, like New York has a western New York and a northern New York and an eastern New York. So depending on the ham population of the area. And each section manager has a whole staff of people. These are all volunteers, by the way, who handle various specific tasks, such as an emergency coordinator. So if there's some sort of emergency in the section, natural disaster or whatever, the emergency coordinator is the person responsible for having a plan in place to get ham volunteers in communication with each other and with the officials to first of all be sure that we're needed, and if we are, then to have a plan in place to make the best use of our communication support. And so that's just one example of an emergency coordinator. And there's a whole bunch of others. We have public information officers who get, you know, information out to newspapers and magazines and TV and radio stations. And we have a whole host of volunteers. So you know, basically the idea with divisions and sections is that we here in Newington, Connecticut, are not and cannot be up on everything that's going on in the country.
You're too far away.
You know, we're too far away both physically and in other ways. We're just not on top of the situation, whatever it happens to be. And sometimes we will have to get involved and make some sort of decision or whatever. But 95% of the time, it can be handled on the local level, either with a division director or the section manager and that person's staff. So they're the people who know the politics and the right people to talk to and all that. So we let those trusted people handle a lot of the affairs of the ARRL, of amateur radio relating to ARRL out there in the field. So that's what we call our field organization, and there's probably thousands of volunteers out there.
Our guest is Joel Kleinman. He's managing editor of QST Magazine, and I've got him on the hot seat, and he's drifting off subject here. We're away from QST. We're talking about the ARRL, which is fine because all of these things we have to keep in mind. Though we have a lot of new prospective amateurs that are sitting there on the edge of their chair, wanting to know some things. And you know what I hate about it at all, about all of anything, I guess I want to say, when you're new to it, is the mystery behind something you don't understand. And a lot of times people will shy away from things that they don't know about, and they don't understand what sweepstakes are. They're probably not going to participate in it. Mm-hmm. There's so many folks that are too shy to say, wait a minute, what are you talking about? What is this? You know? So these are the things that we want to try to highlight. And by all means, I'm not going to try to get you to explain the whole hierarchy of the ARRL. But yeah, you're a good fellow to do that, though, because you're right in the middle of it. QST, really and truly, is the heartbeat of the whole thing. And for years, amateurs have relied solely on QST for all the news, all the information, other than W1AW's bulletins. I mean, QST has been it. And we didn't have the Internet. We didn't have all these things in the beginning stages of this. So
that's true. Well, the thing that I'd like to point out, I mean, you're asking about contests and all the reports that go into QST. You know, it's not a one-man operation by any means. We have on the staff, probably half of the staff of about 100 is involved with QST in one way or another. And they might just contribute a small piece of something every other month, or they might have a monthly contribution. So my job is basically to pull everything together, all the different facets and aspects of ham radio that we promulgate every month through QST, just comes together here, and I in turn prepare the material for our production staff that sets it in type and produces what the printer needs to print QST. So we have a whole, you know, we have a contest manager and that person has all kinds of people outside as contributing editors who write the contest results. And he's, you know, basically in charge of making sure everything's okay before he sends it to me. And then I pass it along to the production staff. So that's just one example with contests. But my point is that, you know, whatever the specialty is or the area of QST that somebody might be interested in, it's not so much something that I do. It's what I facilitate and move forward and make sure everything's on track and right herd on people sometimes when something isn't happening the way it should, and just making sure that the production schedule is maintained every month.
Well, you know, I was reading somewhere, I don't know where it was, and there was a statement being made at the time. Everybody has a book inside them. Everybody should write a book. Everybody has a story to tell. And I hear stories of folks saying, you know, well, that would make a great article for QST. You really ought to write that up and send that in to them. And I have a feeling that few do in comparison to the number of people that could. How are you're looking? I know you're constantly looking for real interesting things that hams want to share. What is the criteria? When would a person be fairly confident that, hey, the story I've got would be something QST would be interested in? What do you think the criteria is for that?
Well, the criteria really isn't that stringent. It's basically, would this be of interest to many of our readers, our AWRL members? And, you know, aside from that, I would encourage people to send it in. You know, if they have a very short anecdote of some kind, if they have a photo that we think we might be interested in, or a 7-page technical article, you know, it runs the gamut. So anything related to ham radio, the best thing to do, I would suggest, for a prospective author or contributor is to look through some recent issues. Just look at the types of things that we publish. And some are called strays. They're little fillers, and they're just miscellaneous things that don't really qualify as articles, but they're worth publishing anyway. We have an upfront and QST column that has a lot of photos and some stories that go along with it. Just people doing interesting things with ham radio. And if somebody's a decent photographer, send us a high-resolution photo, and we'll be glad to have a look at it. We might have a use for it. Some people might be surprised to hear that sometimes we have to put together a cover at the last minute. Like, we have an idea of what we'd like to see on a cover of an issue, and for one reason or another, the right photo hasn't presented itself, so we'll be kind of scrounging around with, you know, a week to go before the issue is wrapped up. And a couple of times I've remembered a photo that somebody sent that looked kind of interesting that we used, and boy, the person was shocked to see his photo on on the cover of QST. But, you know, stranger things have happened.
Well, you know, let's talk about photos for a minute, because everybody has at this point. I mean, everybody's got an electronic camera for the most part. I mean, a lot of people are not using film cameras anymore. I know I'm not. It's just convenient. I mean, you go out and you shoot all these pictures, and you come in, you plug them into your computer, and the computer just vacuums them out of the camera, and they magically appear on the screen. Mm-hmm. But there's some problems with that when you're running a magazine, because now, unless it's something very, very, very unusual, and a person happens to shoot it with a cell phone camera, and it's a very unusual situation where that's the only photograph. I'm sure you folks don't want to produce a picture in the magazine that is not consistent with quality all across the board. So those kind of photos, even like a television station might use that, a video off of a cell phone camera in a pinch if it's the only thing. But for the most part, what you really have to have is high-resolution pictures in order to be able to publish those. Now, explain to folks what you consider to be a high-resolution picture and what is something that would not look so good if it were published in the magazine.
Okay. Well, basically, high-res, most digital cameras have various settings, and unless you have a very expensive and professional-level camera, the highest resolution setting is the one we prefer. And just send us the photo, not reduced in size in any way. Just send us the original photo. And if photos are sent by email, sometimes our email system can be overloaded. If somebody sends 4 or 5 really high-res photos at the same time, so if they're doing that, just break them up into a couple of different emails and just say this is 1 of 3 and this is 2 of 3 and so on. And attach 2 or 3 at a time, and that should be fine. So, without getting to the technical specifications of digital photography, just basically a high resolution setting on the camera and not reduced for emailing purposes.
Like for example, the cameras that we have here, I know my two sons and whatnot, and I think we're looking at 5 megapixels, 7 megapixels. I've seen some on the market now that are going that are 10 and 12 megapixels, but a 5 megapixel camera shooting at its best setting, is that suitable? Would that work, do you think?
Absolutely. Absolutely it would. Yep. Yeah, the main problem we come across with photos is people will send us many photos at a time attached to an email message, and either the email program or the person sending the photos will reduce them in size so they'll all fit on the one message, and that's what doesn't work. But if they're sent to us at full resolution without being reduced in size, then they'll be fine. And I should say also, you were using the example before about the TV station that might use a cell phone photo. You know, if somebody has a really, you know, unusual, unique photo that happens to be taken with a cell phone camera, of course, cell phone cameras are getting better and better all the time, too. But if the photo isn't perfect and but shows something, you know, an event or something going on that's one of a kind and can't be repeated, by all means we consider using that, but that would be the exception rather than the rule for projects and for antennas and photos of people. We prefer to have the highest resolution possible.
As the editor of this magazine, now we're going to get down to the. Do you ever find yourself? I mean, does it ever get to the point like it does around here, where you're getting down to the last minute and you're scurrying around and you think, you know what, I don't think we're going to make it. Have you ever been there before? Mm-hmm. I'm just curious.
We've always made it. I've been involved with QST for about, you know, over 20 years, and not consecutively. I had a stint as our book person. But we've never not made it. We've come close. In the days before we sent PDF files to our printers electronically, we used to rely on FedEx to pick up our package. And the problem was FedEx had a deadline of the last pickup, and we had to be ready by 6:30. And if we weren't, then we'd have to hustle down to downtown Hartford, about 7 miles from here, to drop it off at the FedEx office. But they closed at 7, so if we weren't done by by 7, we were sunk. But we've never missed a deadline.
Just out of curiosity, how many? What is the you may not be able to answer this, and if you can't, don't worry. It's just a curiosity question. What is the circulation currently of QST, or do you even know offhand?
Yeah, it's approximately 150,000. Our membership has increased a little bit recently because of the elimination of the Morse code as a requirement for a ham radio license. So people have shown a lot more interest in ham radio than has been the case. We're also in the sunspot doldrums, as probably everybody knows who's listening. And once they head back up, we expect our membership to increase a little bit more. But the trend has not been positive over the long term. There was a time when we had more members than we do now. And there was a time where the ham radio business was such that we were able to publish much larger issues of QST than we can now because of advertising. And in my tenure, I think the largest issue we published was 280 pages. And now they're the largest we publish is about 180. So it's down significantly from there, and also the cost of printing and paper and all that has been a check on the size. But we're, you know, very optimistic about ham radio. We think it's evolving, and it's not the same as it was 20 years ago or even 10 years ago, and we're happy about that, quite honestly, and we're looking forward to bigger things ahead.
Well, for the folks that, you know, and once again, let me make this announcement. Joel Kleinman is our guest. He's managing editor of QST Magazine for the American Radio Relay League. You know, when I got my novice ham license, of course, it was much different. It was a whole different world at that point in time. But to me, you know, that was so exciting to be able to come home and sit down in front of the radio and flip the switches and make contacts and collect QSL cards. And you couldn't wait for the next issue of QST to come out because you were always curious as to what was going to be in there and what new news and exciting things. You know, now we have a bunch of new hams now, and I think we're going to have a whole lot more. You know, I think that with ham radio, I think it's going to go in cycles. I think the sunspot cycle does have a lot to do with it. It has a major amount to do with it because we're totally dependent on those HF bands. But we are moving away from that with things like Echolink, and all the other technology that's involved, and especially the intensified interest in VHF communication, UHF, and all the other modes, including satellite. So QST has a lot of that information in it, where people can go to QST and learn and find out about these things. But for a young amateur, somebody, and not necessarily young, I want to say a new amateur, somebody that's just getting involved in it, and they've never been a member of the ARRL. They've never really looked at a QST except maybe to glance through someone else's copy. Tell them a little bit what they can expect. We pick up QST and we start thumbing through it. What are they going to find in the magazine?
Okay. Well, the first thing you'll come to are a couple of ads and then a two-page table of contents, and that lists all the articles and the columns. And every issue we probably have 15 articles and maybe about the same number of columns. And we're trying very hard to reach all types of hams, whether somebody's had a license for a week or 50 years. We have a column that runs every other month called Getting on the Air, and it's written by our technical editor, but it's not a highly technical column by any means. It just talks about some issues involved with people setting up their stations or maybe putting up a new antenna, and not anything real involved or expensive, but just the practical aspects of setting up a station. We have a column that runs every month called Short Takes, and it's just a one-page review of some interesting software that's available and something that many hams might not have heard about. It might be directly, usually what's covered is directly involved with ham radio, but not necessarily. It could be something, because hams use computers, just about everybody does. Might be a computer shortcut or something interesting for computer users. We have a product review column that runs every month that has a lot of information about some new gear that has come on the market, and by the time it appears in QST, it's not brand new anymore. You can read quick reviews of gear a lot sooner than you can see them in QST, especially online. But we like to think our reviews are thorough, and every piece of gear is tested very thoroughly in our lab by professional test engineers. And used, if it's a major transceiver, we might have three or four different people try it out and submit their comments on how easy it is to use and so on. And this is a good way for hams, even if they've heard about a piece of gear being on the market. A lot of people wait until the QST review is out before making a purchasing decision, just because our reviews are so well thought of out there in the field. And we have a public service area that we're enhancing as of the September issue, which is the issue we're wrapping up work on now, that will be in people's mailboxes in a few weeks. We're going to make that more attractive and more, a little more of an emphasis on emergency communications, all the good things hams are doing with public service. And, of course, for public service activities, technician class license and some enthusiasm is basically what people need. They don't need a whole lot of experience or a higher class license for that. We have a news and features section that talks about, there's an editorial that runs every month that gives an opinion. We have this just in column that I put together that's just some newsworthy items that are mostly photos, just some interesting things that people can see. We have general, what we call general interest articles that are the non-technical articles that we publish on any number of subjects, usually having to do with operating, a different aspect of operating. Maybe, you know, there's something in our July issue about eSkip, and that's something that's, it's a propagation mode that's sporadic, and it peaks during summer months, so we have in our summer issue, we had an article on that, and that's something not everybody will have known about and hopefully will learn from. And we have any number of columns. We have a column written by somebody we call the doctor, and the column's called The Doctor Is In. And what he will do, what our doctor does, is take questions from ARRL members and respond to them in, you know, just a couple of paragraphs, 2-3 paragraphs, and it might be some question about, somebody's trying to enhance their antenna system and something isn't working right, and what do you think the problem might be? Or would this certain accessory help me, you know, to get on a new mode or whatever? So it runs the gamut of subjects, anything involving ham radio, but on a fairly basic level. And we have our radio sports section that talks about all the competitive sides of ham radio, the contests, the contest announcements, and the special events column, where clubs, for the most part, will set up shop over a weekend, and usually to commemorate a historic event or a historic place, and just get on the air. And it's a listing of those, what's coming up in the next month or two for people to tune into. And people like to do that and exchange QSL cards with those groups. Hamfest calendar. We have conventions and hamfests every month. They peak during the summer, as might be expected. But that's a great way for hams to meet other hams, to look in flea markets for gear, look for bargains, take in the larger ones, and in the conventions have programs, and they might have guest speakers, maybe somebody from the headquarters staff or one of our top-level volunteers might be there talking about their specialty, and banquets and so on. So the listing of that every month. And that's pretty much the highlights. There's
it's full of, it's just full of information and goodies.
Yeah, we like to think so. And as I said, we're really trying to have a substantial amount of material in there for everybody. And that's not always possible. You know, there are some issues that might be a little weighted toward the more technical side, and some issues that'll be a little more toward the general interest or the non-technical side of things, but it all pretty much evens out and over the course of time. And we hope, and the feedback we're getting tells us that we're succeeding pretty well at trying to interest, you know, I have something of interest to all hams in each issue.
Well, you know, I was going to say, and the other thing that's really cool to do is the collecting of QST. I know we've got a collection here, and I've got two sons that are in their 20s that are hams, and they frequently, I see them up here grabbing a QST from, you know, way back, you know, and looking through that magazine, or they're researching or looking for something, and it's a wealth of material. Now, you also have QST available on CD-ROMs, the people that don't have the room over the bookshelves, and they too can collect the old magazines by means of CD-ROM. Tell us a little bit about how that works.
Okay, yeah, we did that back in the 90s. We scanned every page of QST, and we offered CDs depending on the size. Like the older ones with smaller issues, we were able to get 10 years onto a CD, and for later ones, it was 5 years. But those we phased out because the technology just wasn't sufficient these days to produce the type of image that people were expecting. So we do have some of those still available, and you could find some, you know, wherever people find used things like eBay. But we're not producing those anymore. But what we do have is what we call our periodical CD, and we publish other periodicals beside QST, although I hate to admit it, but we do. We publish a magazine called QEX for experimenters, and that's very highly technical. And we publish a magazine called NCJ for contesters, the National Contest Journal. And QST, NCJ, and QEX are compiled every year onto a CD and offered for sale. So we do have those just annual issues. I think they go back to around 2000, and those are produced every year.
Well, that's interesting. Now, I want to ask you, the managing editor of QST, you've been at this for some almost 20 years, you said. Tell me a little bit about your ham radio career. How did you get into it, and what are the things that you enjoy? I would think after publishing this magazine and being involved in the publication of it, it would be almost like eating at the same restaurant every day. where have you settled in, and how? Tell me a little bit about your beginnings in ham radio and what it is that you're up to now.
Okay, well, interestingly enough, I was not a ham when I was hired to work here. I was a shortwave listener as a kid, and I had an interest in ham radio, but I had never gotten a license. And they were looking for an editor at that point, just an entry-level type editor. And I was fresh out of college with a journalism degree and said, hey, this sounds interesting. So here I am 32 years later. So I was told, I was strongly encouraged, in other words, threatened with bodily harm, that I would get my license as soon as possible, and I did that. I became a novice soon after I arrived here on the scene in Newington, and my interest in ham radio is, to be honest with you, mostly here at work, and there are other people I work with here who are on every contest and every possible operating event and go on the expeditions and so on. And I enjoy field day, and I've done a bunch of those, and I do get on from time to time otherwise, but I'm not as active as many people here are.
Well, you know, but that's understandable because you work with it all day long. You hear about it, you work with it all day long. Because when you go home, it's kind of like, you know, you work on a computer all day long. You go home, you don't want to sit down in front of a computer, you know. And I know there's a lot of radio engineers that are not hams, and they have an interest in it, but it's just that, you know, enough is enough. You know, you have it all day long. You come home. Some people, now other people are like our family. Our whole family is just crazy. We work it all day long, and we come home, and that's our hobby at night.
You know? Mm-hmm. Yeah,
but,
that's true.
But we're a little strange, you know. But that's really interesting, because I almost wonder sometimes, though, if let's say you were really involved in one aspect of amateur radio, and you really loved it. I would almost be willing to bet we'd be suffering. QST would be catering to that, mm-hmm. to that section.
Almost consciously, I'd accept all those articles and return everything else. But no, there's enough. You know, as I said, it's not a one man band by any means. It's the whole. There's a whole slew of people who make decisions about the content of QST, and. Yeah, it's true that I'm not a specialist in any one area aside from maybe field day, but you know, it's not like I'm, you know, sitting there making executive decisions on everything involved with QST every month. That's a group function, and it works pretty well.
Well, one thing that and once again, so that folks that just tuned in, Joel Kleinman is our guest, managing editor of QST Magazine for the American Radio Relay League. And one thing that Joel told me, well, before we actually started on the air, was he said, you know, people have the misconception, but it's really true. We are looking. We're always looking for interesting articles, interesting editions. You don't have to be an English major or a journalist to be able to put something together that QST would be interested in. And the other thing he told me is photos, any unusual photograph that's out of the ordinary that folks would really like to see. You folks are looking for hams to share those things with you.
Absolutely.
These are the things that he told me before we went on the air, and those are kind of misconceptions, I think. Folks think, well, you know, in order to write for QST, I've got to have a master.
Right. You know, ideally, in the best of all perfect worlds, if somebody was writing an article, you know, everything would be perfect, all the grammar and spelling and everything, and we wouldn't have as much work to do fixing that type of stuff before something gets published. But we understand that not everybody is an editor and not everybody is an English major, and we're happy to receive articles that are interesting to our readers, and if they're not perfectly written, that's why we get paid the big bucks here, to whip that into shape, and so not everything has to be a full-fledged article. It could just be a photo and a caption, and sometimes we'll go back to people and say, hey, you know, your photo and caption of your, you know, little project there, it's very photogenic, it looks pretty interesting, can you send us some details? And sometimes what started out as just a photo could turn into an article. You know, it happens sometimes. So we do have an author's guide that I can refer people to. It's on our website at www.arrl.org/QST/A-guide for author's guide. And everything's right there, and there's a lot of, you know, do's and don'ts and all that stuff. But basically, the point I like to get across is, yeah, all that is great, but aside from the high-res photos that are really important to us, if something's of interest to our members, we'll take it in, you know, whatever form you can give it to us in, and we'll take it from there. And we could, you know, sometimes we'll go back to potential authors and say, oh, can you amplify on this a little bit? Or we'd like to hear more about that part of things, and go back and forth a couple of times until we get something, you know, exactly the way we like it. And sometimes things come in that are just pretty darn good just the way they are when they arrive. So so anybody with an interest in contributing to QST, feel free. Sometimes we'll publish feature articles on our website as well. And, you know, as I said earlier, not every worthy item will fit in QST just because we have page constraints and we have a certain editorial hole, as we call it, that we need to fill every month. And some people actually prefer being published on our website, because some people do keep their QSTs for years, but then they get to be, you know, too bulky and they're recycled. But on our website, you could go back and tell your son and grandson or granddaughter that you had an article on our website quite a while ago, and it'll still be there. So, and the advantage too of publication on the web is that we can publish something pretty quickly. If something is at all timely, we're better off publishing it on the web rather than QST because of the printing delay and the delivery. So we have a whole variety of possibilities of different parts of QST and also our different publications, including NCJ and QEX.
Once again, our guest has been Joel Kleinman. He's the managing editor of QST for the American Radio Relay League. Joel, it has been a pleasure. I really have enjoyed talking with you. And I must say, just listening to you talk has given me a completely different perspective of the magazine. Of course, now when the magazine comes in, I always enjoy looking at the ads. I mean, I go through, and it's always exciting because there's something about seeing those ads in print. You can see a little, a banner on the web, and you can go to a website, but there's something magical about the print ad in QST, and I guess that goes back to when I was a kid, you know, and I was looking at ads for Heathkit and seeing the Globe Champ and all these other, the Globe King and the WRL ads and all that kind of thing. Just, you know, you go to that magazine, you open it up, and I'm never disappointed in that department. I really am never disappointed. There's always all kinds of things in QST that I haven't heard about and would love to try. So, but we really appreciate your time. Thank you so much.
Oh, it's been my pleasure, Ted.
For coming on and talking with us about the magazine, and hope you return again soon.
Okay, thank you very much.